Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and thank you so much for tuning into this week's Food for Thought, a podcast that's on a mission to equip you all with the evidence-based advice that you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, registered nutritionist, author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In each of the 12 episodes, I'll be joined by guests, all of whom are experts in their field, so that together we can learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest and happiest versions of ourselves with trusted expert advice. Whether you know it or not, you'll probably be eating soy today. It's reportedly in 60% of all packaged foods, and that's from cheese to ice cream, baby formula to biscuits. And in many cases, soy foods can increase the protein content of meat products and replaces meat altogether in vegetarian and vegan foods. Now, there's a lot of misinformation out there regarding soy, so this week's Food for Thought sees Dr. Mark Messina and I explore whether it should really carry a health warning. Hello, Mark.
Hello there.
Hi. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I attended a few lectures now online that you've hosted on the topic of soy, and I just thought you are the voice. We have to get you on the podcast because soy is very controversial these days, isn't it?
It is, and it makes for a very interesting career if that is your focus, and it has been my focus for the past 30 years or so.
Yeah, well, definitely. It's a focus that's an important one because I feel that there's a hell of a lot of misinformation, especially online, when it comes to soy, Mark. And I guess let's start the podcast by discussing what food items do you find soy within?
Well, one of the nice things about soy foods is that they're so easy to incorporate into the diet because there's so many different foods that can be made from the soybean. You can actually eat the soybean like you can other dry beans, which is just boiling it for an hour or so. But most people usually consume soy in the form of the traditional soy foods, such as tofu and soy milk and tempeh, which is a fermented product. And then there's what are often referred to as the modern soy foods or second generation soy foods. These are foods that use a soy protein as a base and typically mimic more commonly consumed foods in Western cuisine, such as burgers and yogurts.
Yeah, I think tempeh in particular is a favorite in my household. And you're right, there are so many different variants now and things that people can get off the shop shelves. So let's run through then the nutritional profiles, how it compares to those other beans or the pulses.
Sure, my pleasure. And it's an interesting question because most beans have a relatively similar macronutrient composition, referring to the protein, carbohydrate, and fat content. But soybeans are very different from all the other beans. It's one of the things that makes them so interesting. They are a little bit higher in protein than other beans, maybe about 34% versus 27% for other beans. But more importantly, they're much higher in fat. It's a very healthy fat, and we can discuss that if you like, but about 40% of their calories come from fat, and then a relatively small percentage of the calories come from carbohydrate, whereas most beans are predominantly carbohydrate. So because of the relatively high fat content of soybeans, many soy foods also are relatively high in fat, and so they're excellent sources of both essential fatty acids, the omega-6 fatty acid, linoleic acid, and the omega-3 fatty acid, linolenic acid.
Yeah, and that's really a key factor, I guess, to consider there as well, because, I mean, when it comes to soy and the confusion out there, it's really hard when you hear facts that you've just stated there about its nutritional profile, how on earth it can get such a bad name. Where does this stem from?
Well, it stems from the fact that soybeans are a uniquely rich source of a group of naturally occurring plant chemicals called isoflavones. And isoflavones are really why I entered the field more than 30 years ago. If you're interested in isoflavones, you're going to be interested in soy foods and soybeans, because if you consume a diet that contains soy, your diet is relatively high in isoflavones. And if you don't consume soy foods, your diet is essentially devoid of isoflavones. So isoflavones have been rigorously studied for the past three decades. And much of the interest in the proposed health benefits of soy foods, independent of their nutrient content, is because of their high isoflavone content. But their high isoflavone content has also led to some concerns being raised about consuming soy foods.
And would you say there is a certain, so first of all, for our listeners, isoflavones, we would describe them, how would you describe an isoflavone to our listeners to explain what it actually is?
Well, it's, you know, from a chemical standpoint, it's a diphenolic molecule, which if you don't have a chemistry background, doesn't mean anything. But they are classified as phytoestrogens or plant estrogens. And so these isoflavones are able to bind to estrogen receptors and on cells and to exert effects similar to estrogen under certain experimental conditions. But what's really important to emphasize is that isoflavones are very, very different from the hormone estrogen. And this has been demonstrated in literally hundreds of clinical trials and also observational studies. And that's really where there has been so much misinformation and confusion about soy. It's because of a misunderstanding about the biological properties of these isoflavones.
100%. I think it's the misunderstanding that's huge. And does that mean that our listeners should only eat a certain amount of soy? Is there a recommended amount that you would encourage everybody to consume?
There is, but let me emphasize that you can have a very happy, healthy life without eating soy foods. But on the other hand, if you do consume a plant-based diet, using soy foods makes doing so a heck of a lot easier. Now, of course, I would like people to consume soy regardless of their, you know, dietary habits or the type of diet they're consuming. But I recommend about two servings per day, two portions a day. It doesn't mean that more than that is in any way harmful. I just think from a Western perspective, consuming more than two servings would be quite a challenge. In the Asian populations, you have sort of in Japan and some places in China, you have people consuming on average about 1.5 servings per day, whereas about 5 or 10% of the population are consuming about 3 to 4 servings per day. And I never recommend consuming more than 4 servings per day, not because there's any harmful effects associated with doing so, but simply because it's not appropriate to place too much emphasis on any one particular food, no matter how healthy that food may be. So I would say the same thing about broccoli or any other fruit and vegetable. You know, you want to eat a variety of fruits and vegetables, just not 6 servings of broccoli.
Completely. Too much of a good thing, we say, as with any food. And you're right about getting variety in, because we've seen a huge rise over here in the UK with soy drinks and yogurts becoming increasingly popular. And I guess, of course, for people that perhaps have lactose intolerance, Would you say that they are a healthier option? Because I think that's what people are kind of going to ask. They're going to think, what does Mark think about these soy drinks and these yogurts? Are they actually good for me?
Yes, I believe so, because of some of what I've already said, which is that if the drink is made from whole soybeans, then you're going to get omega-3 fatty acids and polyunsaturated fat. You're going, in some cases, you're going to get a little bit of fiber. You're going to get the isoflavones. You're going to get a variety of vitamins and minerals such as potassium and folate. Now, I do want to emphasize that there are there's a wide variety of plant drinks on the market, and many of those, typically not the ones made from soy, but many of those are very, very low in protein. And I do have a bit of an issue with those, because I think it's important to maintain our, you know, to make sure we're getting enough protein, especially as one ages. You know, there's some evidence to suggest that older people need more protein in order to maintain their muscle mass, which is important for health and avoiding frailty. So I want to make sure that people are consuming soy drinks that are, because they are higher in protein. And also most of the drinks, or many of them certainly, are fortified calcium and vitamin D. And what we know is that the calcium is as well absorbed from soy milk, the soy drinks, as it is from cow's milk. So I use soy milk. I think there are other options out there, you know, based on other types of plants, but again, they tend to be very low in protein.
That's really interesting and such a good point to consider, because I think the nutritional profile of any swap that people are doing, let's say somebody has drunk dairy milk their entire life and suddenly they decide to switch for soy, they need to check and read the label that it's fortified, it does contain that calcium, that the protein content is okay for them and that they can work it into their diet. It's important to look at it in that way, because
I was just going to say, sorry for interrupting, but in the dietary guidelines for Americans were just released about a month ago now, soy drink, or here we refer to it as soy milk, is the only plant milk that was listed as a suitable nutritional alternative to cow's milk, because the Dietary Guidelines panel of experts recognized that soy milk provides a similar amount of protein as cow's milk. And also the protein in soy milk, soy protein, is a very high quality protein. Most plant proteins tend to be lower in quality than animal proteins. That's not true in the case of soy protein.
Yeah, soy's got those quality amino acids, doesn't it? The building blocks of protein. And it is really important to go into this. This is why we have a whole podcast on this topic with you, Mark, because there are many benefits, aren't there, to having soy in your diet. So you've mentioned a few already in terms of the fatty acids, the nutritional content. What does the research say some benefits perhaps of including soy in your diet would give?
Sure. The benefits range from, in terms of the evidence in support of the proposed benefits, it ranges from pretty solid to speculative. So in terms of a type of benefit that has solid backing is the cholesterol lowering effect of soy protein. And this is a direct effect of the protein, not because soy foods are low in saturated fat and high in polyunsaturated fat. That's a second mechanism by which soy foods can lower blood cholesterol levels. But the protein itself directly lowers blood cholesterol levels. You're going to get about a 3-4% reduction. So it's not a huge reduction, but in theory, every 1% decrease in blood cholesterol levels over time results in probably about a 2% decrease in risk of heart disease. So just by consuming soy, in theory, you can maybe reduce your risk of heart disease by 5 or 6%. And then when you add on to that the effect of the fat in soy, you're going to get an even bigger a reduction in risk of heart disease. So that has really solid data. Probably 40 clinical trials have evaluated the effect of soy protein on blood cholesterol levels. Now, one of the more speculative benefits, and the one that I'm probably most excited about, is the possibility that soy foods lower breast cancer risk. And this is actually why I entered the field 30 years ago. I was working for the National Cancer Institute in Washington, D.C., and research began to be published suggesting that consuming soy may reduce breast cancer risk. Now, there's sort of good and bad news with this hypothesis. One is that I do think that soy lowers breast cancer risk, but in order to derive that particular benefit, in my view, you need to consume it early in life, that is during childhood and or the teenage years. And what's really nice about this hypothesis is that the evidence suggests just one serving per day during that time frame is enough to reduce risk by as much as 25 to 50%. That's what the observational studies suggest. And we actually have a pretty good understanding of why, when you consume soy early in life, breast cancer risk is reduced later on in life. And it has to do with the effect of those isoflavones or plant estrogens in soy.
So that's pretty, I mean, I know it's observational studies, of course. And is there more research currently ongoing in this particular area then with breast cancer and soy?
Yes, definitely. The hypothesis was that early intake is protective was proposed 25 years ago. So we have animal studies and we have these observational studies and we have a little bit of clinical data, but that's going to be difficult to generate because it's not clear what you would look at in a 12-year-old girl to determine whether soy was reducing her breast cancer risk later on in life. But my perspective is that girls should be, everyone should consume a little bit of soy, but girls in particular, because there's no downside to eating one serving of soy per day. As we've already discussed, it's a nutritious food. It's easy to incorporate into the diet. So you have the nutritional benefits, plus you have this potential huge benefit about reducing breast cancer.
I mean, I completely agree with you. And this is where I think we lead on nicely to the fact that where on earth has it come from that soy is bad for us then? When we've got all this incredible research out there and nutritional profile, yet somehow soy seems to have been almost a demonized food group.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I think that you're right. Well, I just want to acknowledge there's a lot of misinformation about a lot of the nutrition areas for sure. I think if you talk to anybody in the field, they're going to complain about the internet treatment of their particular specialty area. But you're right. First of all, recognize that there are about 2,000 scientific papers published on soy and isoflavones every single year. So you think over the past 20 or 30 years, there's like 50,000, literally 50,000 articles. And if one sort of cherry picks the data, it's easy to make a convincing argument if you're not really looking at the totality of the evidence. So that's one issue. The other issue is that the concerns about soy, almost without exception, are based on the results of animal studies. And animal studies are a part of the scientific literature, but they, for obvious reasons, they carry a lot less weight within the scientific community than human studies do. So it's a lot easier to do animal studies. And many of these concerns that arose 20 years ago before we had any data from human studies to refute them. So if you take I think the best example is the case of breast cancer. Even though we've talked about the role that soy may have in reducing breast cancer risk, there's a flip side to that, which is concern has been raised over the years that soy could actually worsen the prognosis of women with breast cancer or increase the chances of a woman at high risk of developing breast cancer from developing this disease. That concern was based on animal studies that was published in the 1990s. But it was about another decade later until we got the human studies that not only refuted the concerns from the animal studies, but actually suggested that soy could benefit women with breast cancer. So today we know, for example, the World Cancer Research Fund International, the American Cancer Society, the Canadian Cancer Society, the American Institute for Cancer Research have all concluded that soy foods can be safely consumed by breast cancer patients. And the European Food Safety Authority and the German Research Foundation have concluded that these plant estrogens, these isoflavones in soy, don't adversely affect breast tissue. So we had about 10 or 15 years of animal studies raising concern. Now we've had 15 years of human studies, not only refuting concerns, but raising the possibility that soy is beneficial for breast cancer patients. So it just takes a while for that information to sink in and to make its way to the public.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Of course, science is evolving constantly. It takes a lot of time. And I guess the connection then between soy and our sex hormones, which is another area that I'm sure that you've been asked about, Mark, a million times, that does soy have an influence, particularly on male hormones? For some reason, it seems to be another misconception out there.
Yes, and that's a topic that's both personally and professionally of interest to me, because I do consume, you know, soy on a daily basis. So, you know, when you think about it conceptually, it's not much of a stretch for there to be a concern that soy could feminize men, because we've already talked about the fact that soy contains these plant estrogens. And most people understand that estrogen is sort of viewed as a female reproductive hormone. Now, men make estrogen as well. And in fact, older men actually make more estrogen than older women. But from a conceptual standpoint, this is where this is the basis for the concern that you were getting sort of this female hormone when you consume soy. So you just have to go to the data. I mean, there's just no getting around it. You just look at the clinical evidence. So a statistical analysis of about 30 clinical trials, the highest form of evidence, was published in 2010, showed absolutely no effect of soy on testosterone levels. And just a few weeks ago, that statistical analysis was updated to include about 40 studies. Again, no effects of even large amounts of soy on testosterone levels in men. Also, no effects on estrogen levels. So that concern is without any scientific basis. We also know, for example, that the clinical trials show that soy does not adversely affect sperm or semen. And I just want to emphasize, I've mentioned clinical trials before. These are trials that carry the most weight within the scientific community. It's the only type of study that allows one to actually reach a definitive conclusion. Mm-hmm. So we know for sure that soy does not impact testosterone levels. And also, we know that soy protein is an excellent choice for those who want to build muscle in response to resistance exercise. In fact, an analysis published about 2 years ago showed that soy protein was as effective as whey protein, which is often considered to be the gold standard, as a choice of protein for building muscle in those who are exercising. So it's a good choice for men, for sure.
Oh, it's brilliant. Thank you for clearing all of that up. And I guess when it comes to our children then and babies, because I have an online platform on social media, and every day I get bombarded with information or unsolicited advice on how I should be raising my son. I have a one-year-old, and I give my son tofu and, you know, soy products every week. And a lot of messages I got suddenly said, that's going to be bad for your baby boy. It's so interesting that this sex hormone link with soy seems to have infiltrated even far down to our babies. Are there any precautions that we should be taking when it comes to feeding our children soy, Mark?
Well, only in the sense that, as I tried to emphasize before, you don't want to place too much emphasis on any one single food.
Exactly.
But in Asian countries such as Japan, soy is especially something like tofu is introduced very early in life, typically beginning about 6 months of age. And, you know, full fat soy milk after 1 year is a good option as well. Again, I like to see that it's fortified with calcium and vitamin D. So, no, I think soy is totally appropriate for children, young children. Now, I will acknowledge that there's less data because you can imagine it's very difficult to do clinical trials involving, you know, 1 and 2 year olds.
Yes.
It's hard to do clinical trials involving, you know, adults, let alone children.
It's hard
children.
To do anything with babies, Mark, anything.
That's right. So, but yeah, I think it's just one of many healthy foods that can be part of a child's diet.
Yeah, I completely agree. Thank you. And then I guess the environmental impact, it's all very well us talking about how beneficial it may be and discussing the evidence, but what do we know at the moment about the environmental impact that soy may have? Because I know that's another separate area that hasn't been discussed yet.
Yes, and I don't typically discuss that. I will hear, so don't be too disappointed. I will hear because it's outside my area of expertise.
Yes,
that's a whole separate field. But I think I'm not going out on a limb by saying that most health authorities, agencies recognize that plant foods in general are less harmful to the environment than animal foods. I mean, there's a lot of debate about the extent to which that is true. But I think it generally is a fact. And when you look at the different sources of protein, plant protein, I would say there's no, from an environmental perspective, there's no better source than soybeans, because soybeans produce more protein per acre than other legumes do. The quality of the protein is extremely high in comparison to other plant proteins. And we have lots of good data showing that when you compare proteins, that really in many instances soy comes off as the most important protein from an environmental perspective. There was a paper published in 2011 that rated 22 different sources of protein, plant, animal sources, and soybeans was number one. So when you look at the environmental advantage and the health advantages, it's pretty clear to me people should be incorporating soy into their diet. What's interesting is that soy often gets a bad reputation from an environmental standpoint because of the deforestation underway in Brazil. But of course, those soybeans are grown almost exclusively for animal feed, not for human consumption.
Oh, it's so interesting. And thank you for delving into that. I know that it's not your particular area, but just a broad overview like that has been very, very fascinating and good for our listeners. We do have questions from our listeners, Mark, for you on the podcast. So just to put you on the spot a little bit more, we've got one here from Freya, who has said, I'm getting so bloated when I eat soy. Does this mean that perhaps it's not good for me? It's a very vague question there, Mark.
Well, I can answer that question from the perspective of what the clinical studies show. And when you compare soy protein to other proteins in the clinical trials, you're not really seeing any kind of gastrointestinal disturbance as one of the side effects. And the scientists look for that when they look for side effects when they conduct clinical trials. Now, some beans, it depends on what soy product you're eating, but some beans contain sugars called oligosaccharides. These are these relatively small sugars that are very poorly digested by our intestinal enzymes. So they travel to the colon where they can be metabolized or fermented, and that can lead to gas production, flatulence. But in many of the soy products, these sugars are actually eliminated during processing. So, you know, it just would depend on what product you're consuming. But that's not a an issue that you see raised in any of the research.
Thank you. No, it's very, very interesting. Lucy, and I think, Lucy, we've actually answered this a little bit, but I'll let Mark clarify again just to conclude the question. Lucy's asked, could soy be messing with my hormones?
So this is a, well, it's regardless if it's a man or woman, the answer is no. Yeah. But again, let me point out that I'm basing my answers on studies. And so, you know, if you added up all the studies, maybe there are 2,000 women have been included in these studies. So I don't want to suggest that in, you know, one out of a million cases, some food could have an effect that's not observed in a clinical trial. That applies to all foods. But what we know from the clinical studies is that soy does not affect estrogen levels in premenopausal women or postmenopausal women.
Great, thank you. And the last question we've got here is from Kitty, and she said, I'm struggling to get pregnant. Perhaps eating soy could help me.
Yes, I'm not aware of any evidence to suggest that soy would help in that regard. It's actually been looked at, and I haven't seen anything to that effect. I did see on the flip side, there was one, it's a case report. It's not actually a study. It's just a description of one individual who actually had low sperm count. And after 6 months of consuming the isoflavones in soy, his sperm count actually normalized, and the couple was able to have a child. And the researchers suggested isoflavones could be a treatment for low sperm count. And there was one study with in vitro fertilization, which is going to be different for pregnancy, which suggested that consuming soy may help become pregnant in vitro fertilization.
So interesting. Gosh, there's so many different avenues, I guess, you could go down. And I did say that was the last question, but there's just one more that I think we should have touched on, and that is menopause. Are there any concrete links between women eating soy and supporting the menopause?
Yes, and I'm really thankful for that question because we really haven't discussed that.
No.
And that's where actually a lot of the research first began, because in 1992 it was proposed that that soy foods could alleviate hot flushes in menopausal women. It was based on the fact that these plant estrogens might be able to sort of compensate for the drop in estrogen levels as women transit through menopause. And also it was based on the low prevalence of hot flushes in native Japanese women. But again, you have to actually look at the clinical trials, and the best analysis was published in 2012. And the results from that analysis suggest that consuming about 2 servings of soy per day, maybe 2 to 2.5, should end up alleviating reducing the frequency of hot flashes by about 50 to 60%, and also the severity of hot flashes by about a similar amount. So if you're having hot flushes, sometimes I go back and forth between flushes and flashes. I apologize, because flushes are used in Europe and flashes in the U.S.
I didn't know that. Flashes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think flush is probably medically more appropriate, but we use flash. And so if you are having hot flushes and for whatever reason you don't want to use hormone therapy, I think absolutely you should try soy foods. Now, before I finish this answer, I want to also acknowledge that there's been a lot of interesting research suggesting that soy can reduce risk of heart disease, not through a reduction in cholesterol, that's a separate mechanism, but because of the isoflavones directly improving the health of the arteries. And then there's also been research suggesting that soy may be able to reduce bone loss in postmenopausal women. And then finally, and this is one of those areas that is very speculative, but incredibly intriguing, and there's research underway that should allow us to make a more definitive conclusion very, very soon. But this is strictly related to vanity. But eight clinical trials have actually reported that either soy or the isoflavones have reduced wrinkles in postmenopausal women. Now, I know, see, everybody, it gets everybody's attention. Now, all of those trials have had design limitations. So despite the fact that there are eight of them, that the results don't allow one to make a definitive conclusion. But a group that I'm associated with in the United States called the Soy Nutrition Institute is actually now funding a clinical trial that should, if we get the hope for results, should allow us to make a definitive conclusion about the benefits of soy for wrinkle reduction. And it's not that much of a stretch to think that soy could have that effect, because there are estrogen receptors in the skin. And the hormone estrogen or the isoflavones in soy can bind to these estrogen receptors, and the binding to those receptors may end up reducing wrinkles. And the kind of receptors in the skin are the kind that isoflavones really like. So I'm very, very hopeful about this area of research.
Oh, it's very... Do you know what? I heard the Alma Board of California also conducted a quality bit of research into wrinkle severity as well, consuming almonds. So it does seem like there's an area here in terms of skincare with diet that has to be investigated further. And the soy research sounds so promising.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm familiar with that almond paper. Yeah, and those were very interesting results. So, you know, for me, when you look at the fact that for menopausal women, that soy will alleviate hot flushes, may have a beneficial effect on the arteries, you know, may improve bone health by reducing bone loss, may favorably affect the skin. I think menopausal women should, you know, be well advised to consume a couple of servings of soy per day. And again, at the very least, it's a great source of protein. And, you know, and there is evidence suggesting that many groups are not consuming sufficient amounts of protein. And there's evidence suggesting that the recommended amount of protein, the RDA, is actually a little bit low. It may not be the optimal amount of protein that we should be consuming.
Well, there you go. It's another question that we're going to have to keep looking into, but a very intriguing area. So we do now move on to our fact or fiction round, Mark. So I hope you're ready to be in the hot seat just one more time.
I am.
Here we go. So if you could answer fact or fiction to the following questions. Soya beans are processed, so it's not healthy to eat them.
Completely fiction.
Good. You're more likely to be allergic to soy than not.
Incredibly fiction. Let me just say that on average, about 3 out of every 1,000 adults are allergic to soy protein. Prevalence is very, very low. And in terms of the first question, you know, most foods are processed to some extent. If you want to eat soybeans, you can just boil them like other beans. You don't even have to go into foods like tofu and tempeh and soy milk.
Exactly. Your menstrual cycle changes with soy in your diet.
That may be true. It's not definitive, but there is evidence suggesting that soy may increase the length of the menstrual cycle by approximately one day. Longer cycles are actually associated with the reduced risk of breast cancer. So soy doesn't prevent ovulation, but it may extend the menstrual cycle by one day.
There is no interference between soy and thyroid function.
That is correct. Soy, even large amounts, does not affect the two main thyroid hormones, T3 and T4. Statistical analysis was published 2 years ago now, no effect. And that's also the conclusion of the European Food Safety Authority and the German Research Foundation.
Oh, brilliant. Men are affected more by soy than women.
Just fiction.
Fermented soy foods are better for us.
That's an interesting question. I would say fiction, But the fermented foods, which include miso and tempeh and natto, are a little bit different than the unfermented foods like tofu and soy milk and edamame, the green soybeans. There are some products that are formed during fermentation that may have some benefits. For example, in one food, you get a little bit of vitamin K. You get some antioxidants in some of the fermented foods. So I like both fermented and unfermented foods. I think you should base your decision on what food to consume on which you like the best, not in terms of any nutritional differences.
Oh, brilliant. Soy makes you gain weight.
Well, I'm not even sure how that one could possibly be true, but that's fiction. And, you know, there's some evidence to suggest higher protein diets may help with weight loss and prevent weight gain. And so if you're thinking of consuming a higher protein diet for that purpose, you want to make sure you're getting healthful sources of protein. And again, I think soy is at the top of the list in terms of a protein source.
Oh, which brings me up to the next question. A cup of cooked soybeans can contain as much protein as a steak.
That's such a dietetic question. Can I just go get my wife? She's a dietitian. I actually, oh my goodness, this is so embarrassing. I'm glad this is near the end of the podcast because everybody else, I'll get back to you on that one.
Yeah, don't you worry. It's pretty on par, so that's good for that one. Eating soy helps with mineral absorption.
No, that is fiction, but the question is often, does soy impair mineral absorption? And when you think about minerals such as calcium, that's definitely not the case. Iron is also fairly well absorbed from soy beans, whereas most other foods, plant foods, it's often very poorly absorbed, but it definitely does not help.
Perfect. There we go. And the last question that we've got there for you is, soy milk is nutritious, but it doesn't need to be fortified.
I think it does need to be fortified because I think it's important to get calcium and also vitamin D for that matter, although there's a big debate about how much vitamin D we actually need. So I really recommend just the calcium and vitamin D fortified soy milks if they're available, and to also make sure that the soy milk you're consuming has a sufficient amount of protein, 7 or 8 grams or so per portion.
Oh, and Mark, that does wrap up our fact or fiction round. Can I just say that your wife and you sound like the dream team? You've got a dietitian and you're studying this area of research. It's kind of perfect in that sense.
Well, it's also it is, and I think it's a testament to our marriage that we have been working together for 30 years and have been married this whole time. But she's the veganrd.com, and so her specialty is vegan nutrition, but she's a really good writer. So nothing leaves this house, nothing written leaves this house without her looking at it first. So thank God for that.
Oh, wonderful. Well, wonderful to hear. That does nearly wrap up the episode, but we always finish with a food for thought on the podcast. And today I think mine would definitely be, take everything you read online with a pinch of salt. I think it's very difficult for us all to decipher sometimes. If you're not a scientist by trade and you haven't been taught how to read scientific literature, it's very, very difficult to decipher fact from fiction, to see headlines in the papers or see a cherry-picked study that represents one thing and not be able to see between the lines. So do question it. If something sounds a bit too good to be true, just kind of think, hang on a minute, surely there's another side to the story here, and try and tap into resources like this podcast. And the information that Mark's just given on soy, I think, has definitely shown that it's a much bigger picture than just a headline for men and their sex hormones. Mark, if you could leave our listeners with a take-home message today, food for thought, let's say, what would that be?
Yes, soy is a healthful food. It's a food that can contribute positively to an overall healthy diet. It's certainly not a magic or miracle food. There are a lot of healthy beans out there. Soybeans are one of them. They are unique, and I recommend that people try to consume 2 servings per day.
Perfect. Mark, thank you so much for coming on and just sharing with us the nuggets of your lifelong research, because I think it's really, really important that people like yourself, you know, do try and speak to everybody and get the information out there. So for our listeners, where can they go to find out more about the work that you're doing or any resources that you would suggest people go to?
Yes, I think the soynutritioninstitute.com is an excellent source. That's the soynutritioninstitute.com, and also soyfoodscouncil.com.
Perfect. Mark, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on Food for Thought.
Thank you for inviting me.
If you are enjoying Food for Thought, you'll absolutely love our up-and-coming episodes. So if you don't already subscribe, then make sure that you click to be the first to hear it every Monday. It would be brilliant as well if you have the time to leave a review, and that would mean that we could reach higher highs in the charts, and that would result in hopefully helping more and more people. For more information about my nutrition clinic, books, healthy recipes, and so much more, please visit nutrition.com and follow me at nutrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.